This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Scott Bauer is the CEO at Prosper Trading Academy. Scott, for folks who haven't heard you with us before, what does Prosper Trading Academy do?
Hi there, John. Good afternoon. Yes, we are a trading education school online that helps people navigate the markets. We trade with them live in the markets every single day. And most importantly, though, we teach them about the markets. We teach them where to find opportunities, whether it's trading stocks, trading options. And myself and the other professionals that are in here, all former traders, we are live with our students all day long during the markets. So it's typically pretty busy.
Do you guys deal in real estate or commodities or other investment vehicles?
No, we do not. And we are not brokers, just to make that clear. We are not brokers. We are traders. We are educators. So we don't trade people's money. We just help them and teach them how to read charts, how to look at order flow, things like that to determine, where a particular stock or where the market in general might be headed.
What have been the unique challenges of that lately for you? I don't mean for you as educators per se, but for anybody in the market, what have been the challenges in the last half year or so?
This has been a very hated bull market, if you will. There are so many, let's call it macro things going on in the world right now that kind of lead itself to the question of why is the market rallying, right? We still have inflation. We still have interest rates so high. We still have, obviously, what's going on in Russia and Ukraine affecting things around the world. And we have the economy slowing down. So when you look at all of that together, put that together, logic, if you will, and there's sometimes not logic to the stock market, logic will tell you, boy, things aren't really so great. And yet the market has rallied and we just broke through this level that everybody has been looking to in the S&P 500, that 4,200 level, which had stood as some really, really major resistance for a long time. And, so it's been a very difficult upside market, if you will. And at the same time, we're seeing volatility almost at, basically 3-year lows, meaning that people in the marketplace are very complacent right now. So it's been it's been a challenge. Certainly there's lots of opportunity out there, but it's been a challenge.
How broad has the growth been in the S&P? Is that just a few leading the way, or is it the whole?
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's one of the things that make this, I don't want to say ominous, but make this a little bit perilous, if you will, in the market, because there are basically 5 or 7 stocks out there. You're talking the NVIDIAs, Microsofts, Apple, Alphabet, those stocks that account for the entire amount of gains in the S&P this year. So when you look at something called breadth is you want to see leadership amongst, a good proportion, a good percentage of the S&P 500, not literally 7 stocks out of 500. That's a little bit cautionary. It really is, because if those stocks start to roll over, meaning if those stocks start to lose their steam and start to sell off a little bit, what is the rest of the market going to do? Is it going to follow it? So that's definitely a bit concerning.
But it is interesting, isn't it, that as few as those companies are, they employ a lot of people. They're no Johnny come latelys. There's nothing fluky about their prosperity. So while I wish it was a broader range, I feel good that it's those companies per se.
Listen, there's no question. Those are by market cap, those are the biggest companies. They're market leaders. They do employ a lot of people. And, if you look at history, when we came out of the great financial crisis back in 08, 09, what we're coming out of right now from COVID, it's not exactly the same. But if you look at coming out of that time right there, the market leaders at that time, they led the market for a very long time. You're talking, 7, 8, 9 years. So these stocks could continue to lead this market, but it's so narrow. The breadth of the market is so narrow. That is what is concerning.
I got to go. What do you think the Fed's going to do on the, 13th or 14th?
Yeah, next week. Well, right now the market is pricing in a 70% chance that they're not going to do anything, but they're also pricing in a 50% chance that they will raise rates the following month in July.
Okay, well then let's check in again then. Scott Bauer from Prosper Trading Academy, prospertrading.com is their website. Nice to talk to you, Scott.
You as well, John. Take care.
Bree Fowler joins us, senior reporter at CNET.com. I can hardly see you over there, Bree.
It has been very, very nasty out the last couple days, but we're hoping things are going to get better soon here in New York.
Where exactly am I talking to you? What borough are you in?
I am in the Bronx, actually.
I saw a live cam from the Bronx, and you couldn't hardly see across the river. Can you just give me a little update on what it's been like for you personally?
You know, I went into the office in Manhattan yesterday mainly to take advantage of the air filtration system.
Really?
But my kids are home with me today. They had a pre-planned day off school, so going into the office wasn't an option. But I'm looking. I can see across the river here now, and, it kind of looks fairly normal out, at least compared to yesterday. Yesterday, it was like when people use those sepia tone filters on Instagram and everything turns into an old-timey Old West photo. That's what it felt like outside. And you could really feel the particles in your lungs if you tried to breathe.
Well, that was my question. I mean, does it smell or do you feel it when you go out? Or is it the sort of thing that looks weird but you don't notice it?
Oh, no, I definitely noticed it yesterday. And every time I inhaled, we're pulling out the old N95 COVID masks and using them. What's really weird is seeing people take them off when they get on the subway instead of putting them on just to get some fresh air. When the subway smells better than it does outside, you know things are really bad.
Apple has announced its long-awaited Vision Pro. What is that?
It is their new mixed reality headset. This is their entree into virtual and augmented reality that is supposed to compete with products from Meta and from Sony. It definitely kicks things up a notch as far as what it can do, but the price is definitely a lot higher than those products as well.
$3,500. Is it for gaming, or what do you do when you've got the headset on?
Well, current products are more about gaming, but this is supposed to be for everything. Apple's referring to it as spatial computing, where you can do your spreadsheets. You can do all of your work stuff on what looks like screens floating in front of your face. You can access all your apps and software. And, in theory, it could take the place of a desktop computer, your phone, things like that. And then, you can kick back and watch a 3D movie on it later.
When you, say, are activating an app or doing a spreadsheet, how am I using a keyboard then, or am I just using my finger and it knows what I'm touching?
No keyboards, no mouse. There are, some gesture controls with your fingers, but it also uses your eyeballs quite a bit. You look where you want to point and it goes there. We had some people in San Francisco that got to try this out, and while there's a bit of a learning curve, it actually works pretty well.
Hmm. Is this price point going to go down like all new products?
Well, I think it might take a while. It has to see if it's going to catch on. I'm sure there's going to be lines outside the Apple store like, you saw in the old days when the iPhones were new and hot. But, at this kind of price point, it's definitely out of reach, I think, for most regular people.
Is it possible this will be a fail? Like, didn't Apple have a product that sat on your glasses and it was going to know what you were looking at? Do you recall what I'm talking about? And is there any parallels here?
Well, I think that was more Google Glass.
Yeah,
they definitely had a product like that. And a couple other, like Snapchat had a pair of glasses too that lasted for a hot minute. They also, by standards back in those years, were very expensive. And they also kind of looked ridiculous. And I think this is an attempt to kind of take that ridiculous element out of these kinds of headsets. But at the same time, I think it would be weird to see people walking down the street with what looks like ski goggles on.
I hear you. I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight it because it's coming, and it might be awesome. But I just worry about a world in which human beings sit in their hovels with goggles on and experience the real world that way, when the real world is out the door. You know.
All right. Exactly. I mean, you know, you think about people crossing the street, you know, with their phone, looking at their phones, yeah. You know, how it, this is going to take that to another level.
Talk to me about the Samsung foldables.
Well, Samsung is going to be announcing their new phones at an event that for the first time is actually going to be in Korea, where the company is based. They're going to hold it in Seoul. I've been to these events in the past when they've been in New York. They're very splashy. They have new phones and you can play with them and use them. And, you know, it's a lot of fun, but they've never really had one in Korea before. So this will be interesting. They have the Flip 5 coming supposedly and the Fold 5. One flips vertically, like, you know, the old flip phones of days gone by.
Sure.
And then the other is the book style one. And these are also, you know, pricey hardware, though not as pricey as Apple's headset. You know, we've seen the Fold has been $1,800, I think, in the past. And they haven't really caught on with the mainstream yet. Maybe that's coming too, but definitely not something that you see in the wild a lot just yet.
What is the advantage of a flip phone?
Well, a flip phone, I mean, what's great about the flip, and I did test these when they first came out, they're very compact. I mean, you can, just like the old Motorolas back in the day, you can shove it in your pocket. And, you know, you still have a decent sized screen and they don't feel very bulky. The Fold, on the other hand, is very bulky. It's a book style phone. It's super thick. My kids, I remember when they were little, referred to it as the iPad phone, which I'm sure Samsung would not be thrilled about.
Right.
But it gives you a lot of screen space to work with when you open it up.
That's all the time I've got. I wish you all good health and keep reporting, Bree. It's nice to talk to you as always.
Great to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
A lot of big shows and trade conventions in Chicago this summer. The restaurant show, the James Beard Awards, were hosted just recently. And here comes another one. Let's talk a little bit about NeoCon, the 12th and the 13th at the Merchandise Mart this month. Jonathan Webb is the director of Workplace KI. Let's tell us a little bit about that, Jonathan, and what you folks do. Welcome back to WGN. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to talk to you again. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about what you do at Workplace.
Yeah, so at KI, I am the director of Workplace Strategy. So my goal here at KI is to really just understand what's going on in the market, what's driving the decision to build new buildings and renovate old buildings and build schools and hospitals, and try to understand the issues that are causing employers to, you know, to have to build those buildings and obviously put furniture in them. This is a furniture show. We're a furniture company. So we're trying to really understand what is driving change in the workplace today. That's what we do every single day.
What kind of stuff is going to be at this show? What kind of stuff will you be displaying?
I think you're going to see a lot of really interesting things at this year's show. First and foremost, I think you are going to see, if you go to the show this year, a large, large percentage of spaces for collaboration and engagement. You know, as people are starting to come back more purposely back into the office, people are, you know, workers are really being extremely purposeful in terms of what they want to get done in the office. And a lot of times that means group work. It means getting together with your teammates and working on projects and so on and so forth. So you're going to see a lot of that. And then you're going to see a lot of infusion between technology and furniture. You know, we all became video conference experts overnight a couple years ago on our laptops, but you know, we still have a lot of clients that they just haven't gotten their facilities up to speed again. They haven't been able to figure out how, you know, four or five people in the office can engage and still engage with another two to three people that might not be in the office. So I think you're going to see this connection between technology and office furnishings even more than we have in the past couple of years.
Can you describe that a little? Because I know how it does work. You get a bunch of people in the conference room and there's one laptop or a bunch of laptops and we all
right.
talk. What changes about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of different technologies, and you know, I don't work for a technology company, but if a company works for a Cisco, works with a Cisco type of company, you know, they're putting together a technology platform. You know, it's about where they put the cameras, and then how does the camera interact with the entire room, and what does that look like? That can influence how people sit and where they sit. It can influence levels of individuals and how they're actually generating conversation with each other. So those are some of the things that we really look at. The other thing that we're always paying very close attention to is acoustics as well. There are so many video conferencing connections now within companies that a lot of times people will be talking over each other. So you know, we're always exploring different ways to take rooms, freestanding rooms, and create a lot of acoustic audio privacy from one room to the next so that people can have those conversations and not have to worry about being interrupted or interrupting the room right next to them.
And this is about getting employees to not only operate more efficiently back in the office, it's about getting them in there at all. You reported to us, I think, that some of the firms in New York are offering bonuses to employees that will agree to come back into the office. Is that right?
Yeah, that was certainly the case early on. But I think that I really think the tides are turning, especially in today's economic climate. At the end of the day, CEOs have a responsibility to their stockholders and to their shareholders. And, you know, when things aren't going great economically for organizations, whether they're stagnating or they're doing even worse than that, they're going in the opposite direction. We're finding that CEOs are really they're taking more drastic measures. And, you know, for example, we have companies like Meta, where Zuckerberg has come out and said, you know what, guys, you know, our stock price has taken this gigantic hit. We need you back in the office. And that's part of the dictate now out in Northern California with tech companies like Meta. We're seeing in other organizations as well. At the end of the day, the dollar really speaks a lot to what companies are going to do from a policy standpoint. And, if the CEO of an organization feels like they need their people in the office to be more productive, then quite frankly, that's what's going to happen. And we're starting to see that tide shift. We're starting to see, quite frankly, over the last 6 months or so, more people spending a lot greater percentage of their time during the week in the office.
So do these employees walk back into the offices now kind of wide-eyed, like, ooh, what's it going to be like now? Or can you describe the either aesthetics or the functionality of what is possible?
Yeah, I mean, certainly when they do have any kind of a hybrid type of mentality or policy within an organization, it's really interesting to talk to some of our clients because there will be employees that come in and they will expect to be able to go back to their quote-unquote owned workstation, you know, and because that's where they've always sat the last however many years that they've been there. And that's not always the case. You know, now you as an employee, you might have to have some flexibility in that you come in and you go to a different place within the office when you have focus work to do, you have some heads down work to do. And it might not be the same place every time because it might not be a quote unquote owned workstation. You know, that said, when they are coming in, a lot of times they're spending time with their teammates and they're doing that teamwork that is needed to foster a better sense of employee empowerment and growth through those different channels, through those different group activities. So, you know, we're seeing that in itself being probably the largest change is that the reduction of one-to-one, i.e., you know, there's one workstation for every FTE. I think we're going to see a lot less of that going forward as organizations open up the rest of their real estate and try to plan for more spaces that are comfortable, are welcoming, and quite frankly, are meant to bring people together in more of a group setting.
What does that say about the cubicle then with the half walls?
Yeah, I mean, there's always room for workstations, and there are always people that are going to come back to work and that's where they feel like they want to work full time. But I think what it means in terms of workstations, it just means less ownership of workstations. There's always times when employees need to do heads down work or they need to take a call or make a call. They need to escape. It might be a respite space. It's just something where they can, get away from the 14 meetings they've already been in for the day.
I think that's an interesting point. I think even at this little radio station of ours, if we had places just a little bit bigger than a phone booth where I can go take this call or do a video conference but not occupy an entire conference room.
Right.
You know, and this station was built out prior to the pandemic. I think the world has changed since then. I think that's a very, and it wouldn't take that much real estate to do that, would it?
No, and you make a really good point about the conference room. I think, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than when you see one person take up a conference room that's made for 26 people.
Yeah.
You know, the size and scale of these individual meeting rooms has really become more adaptable for organizations. We might only need a space that's 6x8 or 8x10, you know, room comfortably for 2 to 4 people or 3 to 5 people. We can also do more of those spaces, and we can build out those spaces and rooms to accommodate different types of meeting. Again, some might use technology, some may not. Some may have writable marker boards, and some might just have spaces to tack things up on a wall. So it really just depends on the type of organization that you work in and the types of work that you need to achieve to get the job done.
NeoCon, North America's largest commercial design expo in Chicago, June 12th and 13th at Merchandise Mart, NeoCon 2023. Jonathan Webb, Director of Workplace KI. You can click on ki.com to find out more. Well, have a great event, Jonathan, and thanks for your information today.
Come see us on the 11th floor at the Merchandise Mart. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. It would be fun to poke around there, wouldn't it? Let's poke around more business news now. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Oak Brook-based Treehouse Foods is buying a Texas coffee facility and coffee shipping business. Grants reports it's a $100 million deal that allowed Treehouse to capture more profit in the supply chain. The company's buying Farmer Brothers, the coffee roaster and wholesaler that provides Treehouse with bulk ground coffee used in single-serve pods and ready-to-drink beverages. Treehouse will retain about 180 Farmer Brothers employees. Treehouse is the largest manufacturer of private label food products in North America. Chicago's losing one of its Michelin-starred restaurants. Claudia in Bucktown has closed after 8 months of operation. The chef says there are financial reasons behind the decision to close. The restaurant is located at 1952 North Damon and featured a 2-hour, 7-to-9 course meal. The restaurant also featured a bar with a changing theme. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Thank you. And on the phone is
Nicholas Jamay, and I'm the co-founder of Sweetgreen.
And he'll share the origin story of that salad chain after I share that we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, the year was 2007.
When myself and my two co-founders, Jonathan and Nathaniel, were seniors at Georgetown.
And they had a problem finding a place where they could get healthy food that was fast.
So we decided to write a business plan that would create one.
16 years later, Sweetgreen is a $1.2 billion company listed on the NASDAQ, all of it built on fast, healthy salads. And in Naperville recently,
you know, we had a line of a couple hundred customers waiting to get in on opening day, which was really exciting.
They were there to see their salad be made by a bot.
It's a location where we're testing automation.
Called the Ultimate Kitchen, which
looks like a beautiful large fridge with a number of refrigerator cases all paired together with a conveyor belt underneath.
It's the first one for the Sweetgreen chain.
You put your order in either on our mobile app, or if you've ordered ahead on your computer, or we have ordering kiosks. And then that order gets sent directly to the Infinite Kitchen, which is right in front of you.
And you can watch it work.
You can see all the ingredients. You can see the tubes that have each ingredient. You can see it being dropped into the bowl. And your bowl starts to get assembled onto this conveyor belt. And what's really beautiful is the bowl can also spin. So it can perfectly plate and portion your ingredients in the right place.
And
the machine makes your bowl in as fast as 1 to 2 minutes.
And one more step.
It finishes at this finishing station where our team members are, you know, adding the finishing touches on the bowl and handing it to the customer.
Jamay says it all adds up to a better experience on both sides of the counter.
The job can be hard. And so when we think about what the Infinite Kitchen is doing, it is taking the most repetitive, monotonous tasks, you know, the assembly of the bowl, and, you know, taking care of that, well, then our team members can now focus more on the fresh prep and the hospitality.
He says it's been a few weeks and so far so good.
Yeah, this is a pilot. And so as we grow and scale, the goal is to continue to make this more and more accessible to more and more customers around the country.
The new Sweetgreen.
It's really exciting to see the way the community has engaged with us.
It's in Naperville, just around the corner from the Apple Store. From the farm to your belly, today is National Name Your Poison Day. You can't have alcohol without farmers. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Sarah Foster joins us from Bankrate.com. Thanks for giving us some of your time, Sarah.
Thanks for having me. Great to be back here.
Is it, I'll just read what you wrote, is it the last call to negotiate for a raise or a job hop? I like the sense of that because it seemed like everybody was in the driver's seat. Is that window closing pretty quickly here?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now are workers who are starting to wonder because, interestingly enough, and this is something that surprised me and has certainly been kind of contradicting what economists have long said, but we're seeing that the Americans who are worried about their job security, they're the ones who are more likely to take career action than the ones who are more secure in their positions. And the reason why I think that's just so surprising is because job hopping, negotiating, those are all features of an economy that normally inspires confidence. But what we're seeing right now are that, you know, confidence is declining. And at the same time, workers are still interested in hopefully searching for greener pastures and making their work environments better.
Why is the confidence dissipating?
I think what has been happening for more than a year now is this recession talk. Workers have really long been told here now that a recession is coming. The Federal Reserve is raising interest rates, trying to slow the economy and cool inflation. And the job market is really the direct casualty that happens when interest rates rise. And typically, we think that recessions impact the labor market by lowering job opportunities, potentially business even cut positions. Their pay also might not rise as fast as it has been in booming times, and even their bargaining power, as the job market is flooded with more opportunities or at least more competition, it ends up resulting in fewer opportunities for workers to at least advocate for themselves.
I know you've put together some tips then for people who maybe feel a little job insecure. What are you talking about?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that recessions don't have to interrupt your career goals or your opportunities that you're interested in. There is just a right way to go about it. And so I think what really it comes down to, especially in times when the economy looks uncertain, is just making sure you're, number one, speaking a company's language and also finding ways to both further your skills and increase your network. And so what I mean by speaking a company's language is just finding ways to really demonstrate the value of what your work is, because in tougher times, it's not necessarily the people who work longer hours that end up getting the pay raises or the new opportunities. It's often the people who have the skills that make them indispensable and the ones who, you know, bring value to a company's bottom line.
Yeah. A friend of mine used to say, don't work harder, work smarter. Maybe a little of each, but more that second one seems to be critical these days. Sarah Foster is an analyst at Bankrate, bankrate.com. All the time we got today, Sarah, but that's a good start. Thanks for your help on WGN.
Thanks for having me again.